C1AP. Number 13A.
We come now to the next tone in this vision of love, where we have seen that the Revelator presents it in the Christianity sequence, going out from the divine principle of harmony from heaven, and sees that this divine principle is always bringing forth at the point of mind a great idea. Mind. And that at the moment that the idea is brought forth, that it has to be seen that that idea can never be destroyed, that that idea is safe, soul. So it was depicted how the great red dragon was trying to swallow the child as soon as it was born. So now, after the birth, we come to the tone of spirit, where we can see that only then, when we keep the idea purely spiritual, that is purely in its principle, that only then is that idea safe. The text here on page 565, Revelation 12:5, reads, "And she brought forth a man-child." Now the birth goes on. "And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne." And you see, this is very typical for Christianity. We said Christianity always traces every idea back to its principle. It is always that point where we must see that an idea of principle never leaves principle, and therefore always will remain in principle, and therefore always that we have to give it back to principle, and never to a person, never to the woman that brings it forth, but always see that it's still an idea of principle. And only then, when we consider it as an idea of principle and not as our idea, then that idea is safe. Then we'll see that the dragon cannot harm the child. Now here again, I think we take the text and read it together, more or less word by word. And as we go on, I try to explain one or the other thing. Again, we will see that she is showing the difference between that child that is spiritual and the child which Mary brought forth as the man Jesus. So again, we will see the difference between the manhood of God and the womanhood of God. The text here on line 9 says, "Led on by the grossest element of mortal mind, Herod decreed the death of every male child in order that the man Jesus, the masculine representative of the spiritual idea, might never hold sway and deprive Herod of his crown." So again, we can see she does not directly interpret the text, but that she begins to show, hasn't something like this happened before with Jesus, and not so much with the woman, but with the male representative, with the male child, namely as the man Jesus. There too, Herod, like the great red dragon, tried to devour the child as soon as it was born. So again, the antagonism is against the idea. And now we come to this point. The impersonization, now that's wrong, huh? The impersonation, that's the right expression. The impersonation see, making it personal, putting it into a person, we at once hear that has nothing to do with the woman, of the spiritual idea had a brief history. There's a brief history. What we want to achieve is an eternal history, not a brief. As long as we are thinking on the level of the 5,000-year period, we will always handle things that are just in a transitionary stage, that have a brief history. We are not actually working out eternal history. So it had a brief history in the earthly life of our master. And then naturally she has to correct at once a suggestion that may come in, but of his kingdom there shall be no end. The idea is naturally eternal. But the demonstration that has been made there was that of the Jesus state of thought. For Christ, God's idea, and now she lifts it up to the woman, will eventually, see, therefore there must something come eventually after the man Jesus, will eventually rule all nations and peoples imperatively, absolutely, finally, with divine science. So is that clear also, that the gain for the end time, so to say, Mrs. Eddy takes up that thought that she began to see that the present age needs the woman's state of consciousness, and no more in the first place as an aim, the Jesus state of consciousness. I don't know if that is a very good expression, what I just said, the Jesus state of consciousness. Actually, Jesus had the consciousness of divine science. What I wanted to say, you know, the 5,000-year period problems that he had to show, the demonstration of divinity in the human. The immaculate idea. Again, you have the immaculate idea, just as we had before, the immaculate Jesus, still spirit. The immaculate idea represented first by men. Again, you have an order, first by men, and according to the revelator, last by woman. Again, the order, that we have to go the order first of the men, state of thought, the 5,000-year period, but then not to stop there, but to go on to the 6,000- and 7,000-year period of the woman. Last by woman will baptize with fire. That's again the baptism of fire and the Holy Ghost. And this fiery baptism will burn up the chaff of error with the fervent heat of life. Now, of truth and love. So she brings in here again that she is interested in this chapter to bring out truth and love, melting and purifying even the gold of human character, so that even that somehow will pass away, so that we have the divine character. After the stars sang together and all was primeval harmony, the material lie, that's the dragon we had before, made war upon the spiritual idea. She reiterates here that the dragon was standing there and was watching the birth in order to swallow it. But this only, see, it's very interesting to see that she says, but, meaning, yes, that is so, but that is not the end of all. There is something more to it. But this only impelled the idea to rise to the zenith of demonstration. Here you have what I said, that Christianity shows us at the point of spirit especially, to bring back the idea to principle. So to rise the idea to the zenith of demonstration, how? Destroying sin, sickness, and death, and, that's the one thing, and the other thing, to be caught up unto God, to be found in its divine principle. See, that's what we have to do. This whole tone of spirit, that as the idea develops within our consciousness, as the idea is great and we give birth to that idea, and as that idea then is misunderstood, and therefore the dragon will swallow it up and will oppose it, then he wants us really to get into a struggle, into an opposition and into a struggle, and there we can be very watchful. There either we can struggle and quarrel with the dragon, or we can be woman. Or we can be the woman that we say, I bring it back to the divine principle. I bring the idea back to its principle and say, this idea is still principle's idea, and against principle nothing can war. The dragon cannot war against principle, against love. In that way we get out of the struggle, out of the warfare with error. The male element in us will challenge it, will fight for it. The woman element is that of Christianity. The male element is the word, usually, the word aspect. The woman sense is the Christianity aspect that says an idea is from God and returns to God, and that. And nothing can touch that. So we go back into our peace and rest of mind and contemplate and see that the divine principle is responsible for the idea. If I give that idea back to its principle and say, you principle have brought forth the idea, therefore you also have to protect that idea, you also have to give to that idea everything that that idea needs, give to that idea power and strength and identity and power of demonstration, and that idea knows what it is, and that idea itself defends itself, and that idea can stand up by itself, so that you are getting at ease within yourself. And then it is here that the idea be caught up unto God, to be found in its divine principle. Then the idea reflects God. Okay? At that point, the text goes on and gives the tone of life. The biblical text we have on page 565, line 29, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God. It doesn't quote the whole verse, because the verse in the Bible goes on and says that they should feed her there for 1,260 days, the 3.5. But it's the 3.5, the second 3.5, because she is fed there, she is supported there for 1,260 days, for 3.5. And so what does it mean? She speaks here that the woman fled into the wilderness. Now we know Mrs. Eddy defines wilderness in the glossary and says it's the spontaneity of thought, an idea, you get the touch of life, the spontaneity of life. Also the vestibule in which a material sense of things disappears and the spiritual sense unfolds the great facts of existence, of life. There where we have seen that if we go along the Christianity order with that woman sense from the standpoint of principle, that then principle will give us a sense of existence. Principle will give it to us. Not we establish a sense of existence and define what kind of existence we should have and what kind of existence we should demonstrate. But in that wilderness where we really go through that sense, that vestibule, where we give up the material sense of things, where all our preconception and preconditionings and we let go all of that, then something frees us and is receptive for the influx of the true idea of principle, bringing us, what she says, the great facts of existence. Here, too, in the text, Mrs. Eddy takes that wilderness experience and goes right back to the Red Sea experience. That was a wilderness experience of the Israelites. So on page 566, line 1, she says, "As the children of Israel were guided triumphantly through the Red Sea," you will notice now how in that short paragraph that follows, Mrs. Eddy constantly uses a term like guiding and leading. Now, we think that guiding and leading is really mind, because we say mind leads and guides and steers and so on, and that's true. It's the intelligence of mind. But we always see that we have to be careful with our ideas of the seven synonymous term, that we have a right place value. The moment, naturally, she is not so much bringing out that mind guides, that the intelligence guides, that not mortal mind guides, but that mind guides, but brings out where does that guidance lead to. And here, that guidance is shown that it leads us upward, exalted guidance, and therefore it has the tone of life, that life guides us along the way of life, which is always an exalting way of life, always bringing us higher and higher and higher. So let's watch that, so that we are not saying, well, guiding and leading, that comes up again and again. Why is that not mind? The whole tonality is the way of life. So as the children of Israel were guided triumphantly through the Red Sea, the dark ebbing and flowing tides of human fear, that's a wilderness experience, as they were led, see again, led through the wilderness, walking wearily through the great desert of human hopes and anticipating the promised joy, naturally this is a tone of love, we are in the vision of love, and anticipating the promised joy of love, so shall the spiritual idea guide all right desires in their passage from sense to soul, from a material sense of existence, from a material sense of existence to a spiritual. Can you see? Now here we get the exalting way up to the glory prepared for them who love God. So we find here the way of life that says life guides and leads you always out of the material sense of thing into the spiritual sense of thing, always leads you upward. Stately science pauses not. Again, you have a sense of life, the spontaneity of life, the great impulsion of life, it pauses not, but moves before them, again leading. A pillar of cloud by day and of fire by night, leading to divine heights. Again the tone of exaltation, bringing out really what we experience at that point. See, when we use mind as leading and guiding, we use mind because we say there must be an intelligence, that is bigger than our human intelligence, than our human mind, to tell us what to do as a next step, so that we can meet the problem. So it is falling back on the intelligence of the divine mind, which has enough intelligence to know how to guide us. But a very different thing is when we work in science, then it is life that is the way of life and leads us along the way of life, because the way of life does not so much show us what is the right way to go and what is the wrong way to go, but the way of life says, I lead you from a lower state to a higher state, to a higher state, to a higher state, to a higher state. Can you see, it's quite a different category. And that you have very often with many of these ideas of the seven synonymous term, that according what they want to bring out, you can use them with one or with another synonymous term. So here the whole tonality is really that in Christianity we are always brought into a higher, into a newer sense of existence. And not just a guidance which says, I guide you rightly so that you are not guided wrongly. That's mind. But life is that it says, you go out from a right basis, but I am going to lead you from that right basis, step by step by step, higher and higher and higher, to the leading to divine heights. So again, I want to bring out what I have said over and over. I know one has to do that because there is a whole year to come, and then somehow it begins a bit to be forgotten, or one doesn't think of it anymore, so one has to hammer it in during the summer school. It's still that great new vision that what we should demonstrate is the unfoldment of the way of life, is to demonstrate what principle wants to bring us, wants to give us, what principle wants to live us. And that which principle wants to live us is always an upward soaring trend of consciousness. It's not so much that we do this right and that right and this right and that right and not wrong but right and not wrong way, but it is an upward soaring way that says, my purpose, the principle says, my purpose is to lead you the highway of life, the new way of life, which climbs up and up and up eternally. So that our vision of what life is, our vision of what science is constantly unfolding or broadening and also exalting. And that gives us really then the true satisfaction of life. I don't want to read the rest of this Stone of Life from Walter Scott and so on. They are nice verses. Everyone can read that. They just somehow show in another language that it is science pauses not. That stately science pauses not. Has always given a terrific impact. Why did she say stately science pauses not? Why not God pauses not? God moves before them a pillar of cloud by day and of fire by night. Why isn't it God that leads us? Why is it science that leads us? That's just the point. That as long as we stay in a religious sense of God and of Christian Science, it never leads us higher. It only can make the present state of things a bit better, a bit improved. Because, she says, science reveals She doesn't say God reveals, because God is a religious term, a religious symbol. And there's a religious connotation. It is a super symbol that has no inward structure. But if we have science, and science has an inner structure, science has the inner structure that it says, science is the compound of categories and the interrelation of categories within a system, so that it is an infinite calculus within itself, and that we can calculate infinitely. And so you get the sense, really, of the possibility that this inner structure of science can constantly restructure itself, and by restructuring itself bring out constantly new and higher and wider aspects of being. That's terrific. You see, we have all experienced that. The whole movement, so to say, has experienced that. But as long as we read the textbook as, so to say, from the point of view that it gives us a sense of God, and we approach it because we read it and think God will help us. In here in that textbook is something that tells us about God, and God is going to lead us and help us and so on. We never really could research that textbook so that it would give further and further insight into the science. We cannot close our eyes to the fact, to the very tragic fact. I've seen that from a little boy on. I could watch that, how these Christian scientists were very devoted. They were very earnest about reading and reading that textbook. And after 10 years, they would say, I can't quite get what it is all about. I know there is the truth in it, and I know it can heal. And it does comfort me from time to time, but I can't quite get what it is. And after 20 years, they come and say the same thing. And after 30 years, they come and say the same thing. And after 40 years, they come and say the same thing. And when I was a young student, I lived together. I was, not lived together, sorry. roomed or so. I had a room in London with a wonderful practitioner, a woman practitioner. That's why I said I didn't live together. He was a wonderful character, sturdy, good, all Christian science practitioner. Nicely white-haired, rosy cheeks. I was a young student in the 30s, and she always came in to me when I studied and said, you know, can you give me some kind of an idea? I've here a case and I can't solve it. Can you give me some kind of a hint how I should tackle it? Because she said, you know, 30 years ago I could heal this case like this, one after the other like this. Today I can't. Yeah?